All right, long overdue, talking to Sal Berry from puckjunk.com. For God, I'm needing. We haven't talked hockey cards in a while with the playoffs going on, a lot going on, always something going on in the card world. Sal, what's up your sleeve or sleeves today?
Well, way back in October, you and I discussed the 1990-91
wait a minute.
Hockey card explosion.
Wait a minute. You remember way back in October?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I got a good memory, you know. I got a good memory for these things. You got to keep track of all these cards and numbers and stuff. You develop a good memory.
Good point. Okay, so we're talking about the explosion of about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that discussion, you said you wanted to talk about the long-term effect.
Yes.
Of the hockey card explosion.
Okay, let's do that.
Well, I think the first thing, and I know we shy away from value, but in 1991, everybody was thinking about value.
Very much so. I had a friend tell me my collection, because I've been collecting since, what, 71, 72, 73, around there, that, hey, Mick, your value of your cards had gone through the roof, and that's not why I collected. But, yeah, I became an instant card millionaire. It was all kind of bogus, though, wasn't it?
Well, it was not so much with the older stuff,
yeah,
but with the newer stuff where, you know, you had five different companies, or three different companies, and then you had Opeachy and then Bowman, which was owned by Topps.
Yeah.
And you had all these different companies making rookie cards, and you had people stockpiling them.
Yes, hoarding.
And, I mean, even I had a lot of Roenick cards as a kid, probably 50 or 60 copies of the Score rookie card, maybe 50 copies of his Topps rookie card, maybe 20 or 30 copies of his Upper Deck rookie card.
Right.
Back in the day. But the sad fact is that despite all the good rookies that were in that year, I mean, you had Roenick, you had Fedorov, you had Belfour, you had Recchi, Stevens, Sundin, Brodeur. You can have all those cards for like a dollar or less. In fact, maybe a year ago, I was at a show and I found Martin Brodeur Score rookie cards for like a nickel a piece in like a rummage box.
Sure. And that's not really the way it should be. Those rookie cards, if it had been like the 60s or early 70s, they'd be, you know, hard to find. A Bobby Orr rookie card, a Guy Lafleur rookie card, a Larry Robinson rookie card. But because, as you said, there were so many, and people like yourself, now, if you're hoarding 50, 60 of them, you know, I had like 10 of them, and there's probably a whole bunch of people like me, and they all came out of the woodwork and just devalued it. I mean, it's kind of a lesson in currency, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you had so much more, because you had more places selling the cards back then, so it wasn't like special trip to the card shop. It was like, you know, pick up a pack at a gas station, at the grocery store, at the drugstore.
Yep.
And I was, you know, I was able to find cards pretty much anywhere, so I bought cards pretty much everywhere. But then again, that reflects that there were more places selling them, therefore more of it was being printed.
The upside of that, of course, and we talked about this just before we went on air, is that I could find hockey cards. Here I live in Toronto, one of the centers of hockey in the entire universe. They think they're the center, but they're one of them. And I'm telling you, Sal, it's not that easy to find stores that sell hockey cards in Toronto, Canada.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, Chicago, I mean, it went from being very hard to find hockey cards to very easy to find hockey cards. I mean, I even remember picking up, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I remember picking up a Memorial Cup boxed set of cards
right
in a drugstore in the suburbs of Chicago, because they had, like, they had an aisle of just different sports cards, and it just, I mean, that is so odd, because not even minor league, we're talking junior league cards.
No, I got you. Now, as a collector, if you're not doing it for the value, you know, for the monetary value down the line, just as a collector, that was a nice thing to have happen, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It made life easier, especially when you're a kid, you know?
Yeah.
It's just easier to find the stuff. But one thing, though, is that what was interesting about all the different rookie cards is it kind of led to, like, this rookie arms race.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas before it used to be, most of the time, there were exceptions like Orr, like Lafleur, but most of the time, a player played a season, and if they were good enough, they got a card the next season.
Right.
So Brett Hull's big season was 87-88, and his first NHL card was 88-89.
That really boring card, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was that headshot.
Yeah.
There where they airbrushed out the Flames jersey.
Yeah.
But now what they were doing is they went so far as not only to show players that had debuted that season in like a series two or an update set, but they even started getting into the World Junior Championship. And then even in the late 90s, you had sets putting out cards of players with their junior teams. Like, I think Roberto Luongo's rookie card actually has him with his junior team.
Yeah, that got crazy. Remember about 91, the rush to get Eric Lindros on a card? And was it Upper Deck that jumped the queue by having him on a Team Canada for the Canada Cup card or something? And
yeah,
everyone else cried foul?
90-91, well, Score had his rights until he was a NHL player.
Right.
So until then, only they could feature him in a set of cards. Of course, other companies kind of took liberties with that. Classic would show him as an Oshawa General and say, well, you know, we're just showing him as a draft pick or
right.
whatever. Upper Deck showed him in the World Junior Championships in 91. And said, well, you know, he's just
yeah.
he's in this tournament and we have the rights to photograph this tournament. But what it ultimately led to were rules about rookie cards. Now, players have to play in one game before they could be featured on an NHL trading card, whereas before, you know, the sky was the limit.
Does that rule still stand?
Pardon?
Does that rule still stand now?
Yeah, actually, it is in effect right now. That's what I mean. That's,
yeah.
that's the thing. And that was it was probably done so non-PA players were not, like, in the set of cards, and I mean, because they'd have to negotiate, the
yep.
card companies would have to negotiate a separate contract from that player, and they might, it could potentially, their cut could be higher than maybe what the NHL players are getting from just being included in the setup.
Yeah, because it's all on futures that you're trading on, and the guy may not even make the league. Yeah, I guess that leads to the whole thing about update sets, which is a very baseball thing when I was in the 80s collecting cards. But I guess you can have an update set right away in the season then, couldn't you?
Yeah, and I mean, Upper Deck even does that. Like, towards the end of the season, they usually do a set called Rookie Class, which will feature like 50 or so of like the top rookies from that year.
Right.
But another thing is because the hobby is now driven by rookie cards. I mean, it's funny. Like, if you look for 2005, 2006 Upper Deck, like, sealed boxes of Series 1, you won't find them because Crosby was in that set. And so you hardly find any unopened wax from 2005, 2006.
Right.
But 2006, 2007, I think the top rookie was maybe Malkin in Series 1, if I'm not mistaken. He could have been in Series 2, I'm not sure. But the point is that it's easier to find boxes, unopened boxes from that year. So it really just depends, like, who the big rookie is. If people get excited about it, like, oh, I really want to get a Tavares
yeah.
rookie card, then they're going to buy more boxes. So it's really become driven by rookie cards. And another thing to kind of help fuel that, rookie cards have become short-printed now, whereas before they were part, remember the old OPG sets were, what, 264 cards or 396
right.
cards?
Yep.
Every card was printed in the same amount most of the time. With the Topps cards, sometimes you had double prints and single prints, but that was just because they were trying to fit X amount of cards on a sheet that
yep.
would get printed up and cut up and put into packs.
Sure.
Now, they purposely, you'll get like a rookie card in every other pack in something like OPG or maybe every fourth pack in something like Upper Deck, and that is to make the rookie cards even rarer and therefore more desirable.
Makes sense. We're talking to Sal Berry from puckjunk.com. Check out his website. Lots of stuff on collectibles, particularly cards. And this is called Do God 'Em Need 'Em. We do this on the War Room. Okay, let's look at some other long-term ramifications of the great card glut of 20 years ago.
Well, another big thing is, I mean, you probably remember, when did OPG cards usually come out? January?
Yes, they did, and it used to frustrate me because as a kid I wanted them to come out in October.
Mm-hmm. Usually the Topps cards came out in, like, late October, early November. So then you bought a box or two, you made a set, and then what?
And then you waited till the next January, or
yeah,
you traded with your friends.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe you ended up buying, like, non-sport cards or maybe some other sport.
Yeah, I bought Planet of the Apes cards, Charlie's Angel cards. I know what you mean. Yep.
Yeah. So now, another thing that happened from 1991 is Topps put out a Bowman set. Bowman used to be their competitor
yep.
in the 50s and 60s with baseball cards, and then they just bought Bowman outright so they could have all their contracts with the Major League Baseball players that they, you know, that Bowman could feature on cards.
Yep.
Then in 89, Topps put out a Bowman set of baseball cards. And in the 1991, they put out a set of Bowman hockey cards, which really didn't make sense because that name didn't mean anything to hockey collectors.
No.
But what it did is it allowed them to sell two sets now instead of one. And an OPG kind of did the same thing, but did much better with their OPG Premier set.
Oh, I remember that set. That was hot for a while.
That was a big deal. I mean, I remember, I think my aunt, well, it was my aunt, but I think she paid something like $250 for a box of the cards.
Ooh, baby.
I got her into collecting.
Yeah.
And I just remember us sitting there, and we're, like, opening these packs of cards, and I'm like, this is so cool. We're opening, like, these really expensive, well, I thought really expensive
sure.
packs of cards, because at the time, it was a lot of money for...
Well, they were.
The price shot up. I'm not sure what the print run was, but I know... I'm pretty sure they advertised it, and that was part of the thing that fueled the speculators.
Did it maintain its value to any degree, that set, of all
no,
the sets?
No, you could get, I mean, you could get an OPG Premier set for well under $50. I mean, I think you could actually probably get one in the 10 to 20 range. The only thing that really sells well for OPG Premier is they did put out some factory sets
yep.
that had, like, the custom box, and they were, like, shrink-wrapped and stuff, and those usually tend to sell for around the $50 range. But
okay.
now, if you look 20 years later how it is, Upper Deck just doesn't put out Upper Deck and they're done.
No.
Well, of course, there's two companies now, so they put out many sets. But even in, like, the mid-90s, late-90s, early 2000s, I mean, you had Topps putting out Topps and Bowman. You had Pacific, and they put out, like, three or four sets a year. You had Upper Deck with their SP and SP Authentic and ice and all the different.
Oh, yeah.
So that's another thing.
That's when I started to lose interest, Sal, because
really?
I found it was too much. I couldn't keep up. I knew I couldn't be a completionist and get them all, but it was just too many to keep track of.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. It did kind of take the fun out of it because it made the goal so unattainable.
Oh, completely.
If you factor in, like, the short prints.
Yes.
Which started in the late 90s. Upper Deck started that. Now, there were, every now and then, there'd be a short-printed card here and there. But, yeah, by the late 90s, it was starting to become standard fare in a lot of the sets. So, yeah, that did kind of ruin the fun for a lot of people. And then, not unfortunately, the printing got better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they had to put in more had to be put into the cards as far as, like, autographs or jersey cards. This raises the cost.
Or foil and stuff like that, right?
Pardon?
Or all the foil cards. And
yeah, the foil board or
yeah.
shiny cards or holograms or whatever, and then
yeah.
you factor that in with the jersey cards, autographs, and this, you know, knocked up the price
sure.
quite a bit. So now, unfortunately, 20 years later, you might look at other things. I guess other things have progressed. Similarly, like a comic book in 1990 was maybe like a buck and a quarter, or we'll just say a dollar. Now I think a comic book is like $4.
Yeah, I buy them for my six-year-old, and yes, they are about $4.
$3.95, yeah.
But you know what? When he's looking at the comic books and he's got his meager allowance that I give him, he's more likely to buy the comic book than a pack of cards. And I'm telling you, back in the day, as we say, the cards was first and foremost on my mind because they were cheaper and more plentiful. But you make a set of cards, you know, $2, $3, $4, a kid ain't going to buy that. I know they come out with some cheaper sets for $1.50, but even that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, all things, you know, being consistent. So if comic books were $1 then and $4 now, that means that a 50-cent pack then maybe should be around $2 now, but they're not.
Yeah,
I mean,
for the most
yes,
part.
Victory is $1.
Yeah.
Score is $1. Upper Deck is $3. But then anything, you know, after that, you're looking at, like, I mean, what was it? Not certified. It was one of those, I can't remember now, but, you know, now you got cards at, like, $10 a pack and up.
So. And I don't know what that means for the future of collecting. It's like outpricing tickets for sporting events, and you want to hook in the 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds for life. I guess that's why they have the victory set for $1. So that's the starter set, because most of these sets now are for guys our age who have a bit of money, supposedly, and they can do this as a hobby.
Yeah, but one cool thing, though, is because they have to try harder and there's competition again because Panini has a license,
yep.
is that they'll have to try a little harder. I mean, I know Upper Deck was doing stadium promotions this year where they'd give out, like, a pack of, like, 5 or 6 cards, but these weren't just, like, a regular pack. This was, like, if you went to a Blackhawks game, it would be 5 Blackhawks.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah,
they'd be like they'd be numbered different, and they would actually lack like the shiny silver stuff on the front or whatever. So they're almost like pared down versions of the cards. But still, and then Panini, I know they had like a lot of giveaways at the All-Star game weekend,
yeah. right?
Stuff like that. So in a way, that's nice to just for them to have to try a little harder.
Now, we've run out of time today. You probably got some more things to this to deal with, do you?
The only other thing I wanted to mention was that, just that, like, now the cards, you know, now that we're 20 years back from this date, people don't look at it so much as junk. I mean, they still refer to it as the junk wax era of trading cards.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have people trying. A lot of people liked the design of the score set because it was the old set.
Yep.
And then you have a lot of people, well, quite a few people trying to collect the Upper Deck parallel inserts that look like the 1991 set.
Right.
So I guess, you know, you look back 20 years later, sure, you see a lot of the bad things, but you also just tend to remember a lot of the good things.
Well, absolutely. And you know what? One of the more maligned sets, we've talked about it before, but I thought it was fun to collect, was the Pro Set set.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considered like the joke after a while up here. They'd give you 10 boxes of it if you walked out buying a bushel of tomatoes. They just want to get rid of the stuff. But I thought it was always fun to collect. Any set that had referee cards was all right with me.
Yeah. Well, maybe next year we'll get some more referees. Or it'd be nice to see something different. Referees, coaches, just something. Just
pictures of the buildings, you know, like that.
Oh, I'd love that.
Ice girls, if you want to do that. You know, some people be into that. Maybe the different Zambonis, the mascots. There's so many places you can go. Maybe
you know,
a shot of the different hot dog stands.
Upper Deck actually had an April Fool's joke on their Twitter feed. They said that they were going to do a set of mascots.
Why not, though?
I don't know. I tweeted back. I'm like, hey, I would actually buy this.
I want a Sabretooth card. You're darn right.
Yeah, Sabretooth and, Tommy Hawk. And then who's the guy up in Montreal?
Oh, Yuppie, the old Expos.
Yeah, it used to be the Expos.
I absolutely want one of those. Hey, Sal, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care.